The Phil Nason Show, Phil Nason Show is on in 5, 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We have a great baseball show planned for you today. Coming up later on, Rush Olson and I will be looking at who MLB.com believes are the 10 top offenses in Major League Baseball, at least on paper, followed by Mark Berman from the New York Mets blog, bloggingmets.com. He and I will be talking about Ralph Kiner and a bunch of other Mets stuff. But up first, Coco Crisp has been extended, which is kind of not normal for the Oakland A's. And Yanis Cespedes wants to stay forever. And joining me to talk about all that and more, please welcome from AthleticsNation.com, Alex Hall is in the house. Alex, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
3 more years. 3 more years of Coco.
3 more years of hot Coco if he plays like he did last year. What's the story here with Coco Crisp? I thought the Oakland A's didn't like to extend outfielders, especially 34-year-old outfielders. What's up with Coco Crisp?
They don't really like to extend anybody normally, but at some point you have to put 25 guys on your roster, so someone needs to be on the team. While this is a 3-year extension, really it represents 4 more years of Coco because he was already signed for this season on the option that was picked up. So the A's already had him for 2014. Now they have him for 15 and 16 and an option on 17. So they could have 4 more years of Coco, which is significant for the first reason being he is now the player who was under contract for the longest on the entire team. So him being locked up through just 3 more seasons is a longer deal than anyone else on the entire team has. Now, there's other guys who have more team control, like Sonny Gray can't leave for 5 more years, but not actually under contract, then they'll be much cheaper because they're on their rookie scales. But Coco, the guy with the longest deal now, and I'm happy about that. Like you say, the A's don't normally extend guys, but the thing they don't normally do is give people 4 or 5, 6 year deals, really long, expensive contracts that really hamstring your payroll and take away your flexibility. This is a little bit easier. This is only going a couple of years into the future, 3 years guaranteed into the future. That's not too far ahead. And it's for a player who has not only maintained his level of performance into his early 30s, but actually gotten slightly better. And he has been a fantastic player for the A's. We'll get to that in a second. Like I said, you eventually have to pick somebody and go with them. You can't live the entire team year to year. You can do that for the most part. But what Coco brings to the A's is some things that they don't normally pay for, maybe. Some things I'm not used to them giving a little bit of extra for. Yes, he's been fantastic on the field, and you can justify these dollars, 2 years, $11 million per year. You can justify these dollars based on his numbers. He's been a 3-win player or better every year that he's been on the A's. He's been in Oakland for 4 years. Even the year that he missed half a season, he was still a three-win player because he was so good that year. So he has been consistently above average starting outfielder for all 4 years he's been on the A's. And last season was his career year, arguably at the plate, hitting 22 homers. He'd never broken 20 before, set a career high for walks and runs scored. He was a very big part of that team, a very big part of that offense, which ranked third or fifth in the majors and runs scored. It was a very good offense, and Coco was one of those stars. But he was also all those intangibles that sometimes fans like myself that are into the objective side of things like to laugh at. Being the team leader, being the guy in the clubhouse, being that cagey veteran that can come through maybe when you really need him to, even if the numbers don't seem to support it. And he's also a big fan favorite. I am yet to talk to an A's fan who doesn't love this extension, even though it's for an aging outfielder. Everybody loves this guy. He's just fun to watch. He got his goofy hairstyles and the way, you know, he plays, diving for balls in center field and stealing bases and doing all the most exciting things there are in baseball, all with his big smile on his face. Everybody loves him. He's the favorite player of all the kids. Everyone loves to say his name. I mean, there's just sometimes that perfect storm comes along and you're like, you know what? Yeah, normally I wouldn't extend an outfielder in his 30s like that, but you're the guy. You make sense. And we're comfortable with you. You're a known quantity. You've been around for a few years. Yeah, you're injury prone, and we'll cross that bridge when we get there. He's going to miss time at some point during this deal, but he has been such a big presence for the A's, and it's not like you're giving him 25 mil. I mean, this is still a pretty relatively cheap player. Yeah, 11 million a year is now a relatively cheap player. So what it comes down to is they like the guy. It's not too long term. It's taking through maybe age 36, 37. That's going to be a little shaky then, but it's not going to be for 25 mil a year. So even if he's terrible, it's a little easier to hide 11 million dollars on your payroll in the year 2016 than it was to do that 10 years ago. So yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I think it was a good move, and I'm happy that he'll be around because I love watching Coco Crisp. Baseball is more fun when Coco Crisp is on the field.
Yeah, but it won't be much fun when he's 37 and he can't get to the ball anymore and they're still paying him $13 million. But that's neither here nor there. He's there for now, and God bless him. Cha-ching, that's what I say. Now another athlete, one of my favorites actually, Yoenis Cespedes. He wants an extension. He guarantees that the Oakland A's will be in the playoffs. This is what he had to say, Alex. I would like to play to the end of my career in Oakland. He said that through an interpreter, which is good enough for us. And you know what? Do the Oakland A's, does it make sense to extend him now after a down year, or do you wait? What do you do with Yoenis Cespedes?
This is a tough one for me because as a fan and as a really big fan, you never want your players to leave. You don't want your good guys to go. But as an A's fan for my entire life, I've grown accustomed over the years and over the decades to the inevitability that your guys are going to leave. It makes you look at your players a little bit differently. A Giants fan looks at Buster Posey and thinks to themselves, this guy is going to be here forever. I can go buy this guy's jersey. I can make him my favorite player because he's going to still be here in 10 years, and it's going to be awesome, and we're still going to love him. As an A's fan, I look at the guy, and I think, well, I get 6 years to root for him. I'm going to budget that into my head right now and plan accordingly and get attached, but not too attached, because I know this guy is going to be gone. And that's how it's been with Cespedes. The A's signed him for 4 years. And the reason that he chose Oakland over the other teams who were getting him 6 years is that the A's offered the same amount of money in a shorter term so that he could hit free agency a little bit sooner and go for the big mega contract. That was specifically the reason why he signed in Oakland. That was what the A's gave him that other teams weren't giving him. And that was free agency before he turned 30, or I guess when he was turning 30. That was what he was looking for when he came to America. And so all of us look at that and we say, well, cool. We get 4 years of Cespedes, maybe three if we're not good enough and Billy Bean trades him for prospects. That's been in my mind the entire time he's been on the team, is love him to death now because he's going to be gone in a few years, just like they all are. So while I love him and absolutely love watching, I mean, this is one of those guys that you stop what you're doing to watch him hit, because if you don't, you might regret it in 10 seconds because he's about to do something amazing. And this is why you watch sports, is to see the kinds of things that Yoenis Cespedes does, the home runs he hits, and the throws he makes from the outfield are the reason that you watch sports, because you didn't come to see the mediocre pitcher get that mediocre player to ground out to shortstop. You came to see Yoenis Cespedes hit one 450 feet, you know, into the left center power alley. That's what you came to see. So it's tough to look at a player like that and think, no, you know, I don't need him long term. But this is where the more reasonable, budget conscious A's fan comes in. And I look and I say, Cespedes, who he has been a very good player and he does amazing things, but all told, his value has not been incredible yet. He's only been worth a total of about 5 wins over the last 2 years, and he was better in the first year than he was in the second year. So I look at this, he'll be 28 years old this year, which means when he hits free agency, he'll be entering his age 30 season. Now, we were just talking about the A's locking up Coco in his mid-30s, but that was only for a couple of years. There's lower risk and a lot more the flexibility is not hampered as much, because if something goes wrong, you're only eating 1 or 2 bad years of a contract. But with a guy like Cespedes, I look, first off, what's it going to take? He's not going to extend for an extra 2 seasons. You know, if you want to extend Cespedes on top of what he already has, you're going to have to give him probably 5 more years, 4 or 5 more years. So do you want Yoenis Cespedes for his ages 30 through 34 or 35 seasons? Yeah, maybe. I'm not as excited about those years as I am about his mid-20s. And, I mean, he hasn't even hit 30 home runs in a season yet in his age 27, you know, year. That's not that meaningful of a milestone. But I guess I needed to see one of two things. I needed to see him do mind-blowing things statistically in these first couple of years, or I needed to see him be the model of health, a very reliable guy who was such an amazing athlete. I think of like LeBron James. Like, that guy crashes around like anyone else does, but he almost never misses a game because he's just such an amazing athlete. He just doesn't get hurt, I guess. So if I saw one of those two things, if I saw his amazing talent translating into you know, 6 or 7 win seasons, or if I saw him playing 162 games a year, I'd be a lot more interested. As I look at it now, I say, can the A's maybe live without this guy? If it comes down to it in a couple of years, can they live without this guy? And I kind of think they can. Do I want to pay 5 years, $100 million for his early to mid-30s when he might start declining, when he might start missing half a season? And it's not just his legs that have injury issues like any other fast runner does. It's also his hands and his wrists. And those things haven't gone away over the last 2 years. Those are really bad things for a power hitter to have. And when he went to the home run derby and he swung even harder a bunch more times, he had even more hand and wrist problems. So it seems like something to me that isn't going to go away. It might even get worse over time. I'm terrified of Cespedes' health, especially moving into his 30s. And it really gives me pause before I think about giving him a huge extension, because I'm afraid, I can't shake the feeling it's going to be dead money. And that's probably just the risk-averse nature of having been an A's fan and never having to put the dice on the table on one of these deals. If I could bring him back for just a few more, if I could bring him back for like 4 years and 60 or 80 million, I'd jump on that, yes. But if it's going to take 6 years and 150, because this guy's a huge name, a huge international name that won a home run, then I don't want it. It's too much and it's too long. I like the way that Billy Bean is keeping things short term and keeping the flexibility going.
We got about 30 seconds left. Well done. And here's what I'm thinking. I think if I'm the Oakland A's, I re-sign this guy. You know what? He had some problems. It was his second year in the league. He was still getting used to America. He has his issues. But for some of the – I couldn't keep track of all the reasons that you described. But the main one is I would sign him over Coco Crisp, and I'll tell you why. Because he's going to put more people in the seats, because you want to see him hit that 430-foot bomb. And that's important to me. It's important to fans. And he's going to be around a good long time, I have this feeling. Alex, great stuff today. Thanks so much for being on the show with me.
Hey, thanks a lot, Phil.
All right, that was Alex Hall. You can find him at athleticsnation.com. Coming up next, Rush Olson and I will be looking at the top 10 offenses for 2014, at least according to MLB.com. And you Oakland A's fans will want to stick around and see where you ranked out. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to PhilNasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at DraftStreet.com today.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out BaseballPodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at BaseballPodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at BaseballPodcasts.net.
Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author K. Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. K. Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmedor.com. That's authorkmedor.com.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean? That's
sure.
got to be a big, strong big, thing. Strong.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
What is this? What's going on here? What are you people doing here?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Major League Baseball is finally beginning. We're going to head into spring. Pitchers and catchers are reporting at the various camps. But we're going to talk a little bit about offense tonight. Rush Olson from Rush Olson Creative and Sport is joining me on the line, and we're going to look at an article that he found about the top 10 lineups, and we're going to interact a bit with that. Please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, how you doing, man? Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here, Phil. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. This article that you found, it's pretty good. I guess what I'll do is go from 10, 9, and work our way down, I suppose. From 10 and work the way down. Tampa Bay is at number 10. The Washington Nationals are at number 9. The Blue Jays are at number 8. And you know what? I'm not so sure I'd have the Rays ranked so high, and I'm not so sure I would have the Blue Jays ranked so low. I think the Blue Jays have a pretty good team. What did you think about the top, or I should say the bottom three selections?
Well, the Rays, I think, do have a good offense. Is it as good as some of the teams that were left off? That I'm not so sure. And as we go through the whole list, folks will be sort of able to judge that for themselves. One thing you have to remember about the Rays and about a little spoiler alert here, the Oakland A's are also on this list, is you're not necessarily just judging their offense by their everyday lineups, because their managers like to platoon and they do so very effectively. So it makes the productivity of their offense greater than maybe if you're just looking at straight up stats. The Blue Jays, they're a very exciting team. And I think if you were making this list last year, they certainly would have been ranked higher than number eight based on the projections of what you thought they could do. And they still might be pretty good this year. I mean, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Reyes, if those guys all stay healthy and are productive, they really could be a top five offense.
Well, I like Colby Rasmus too on that list, and if you know, and this article did point him out, and they also pointed out that Reyes and Cabrera and Brett Laurie, none of them played very much last season. I don't think any of them even had 100 games played, and if that's the case, you know, that's probably why they were finished so low, even though they had a top 10 offense. But the interesting thing about the offense is that overall it has gone down, and so some people say 800 home run or 800 runs scored is a top team, and this article pointed that out. And, well, it is what it is, right? So, but what about the Rays, though?
The Rays are, I mean, that team, you look at them every year and you think, okay, well, they're probably going to be pretty good. And then they end up being a little better than pretty good. And they're always right in the mix at the end. And it's such a credit to the way they have developed their system for bringing along young players, to the kind of manager that Joe Maddon is. Yes, we've got them ranked 10, but, you know, you could look at that and say, hey, these guys could be just incredible. You know, or conceivably, I suppose they could fall off the map. But I'd say that the former is more likely.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. Now, the Washington Nationals, they were awful at the first half of the season, and then they caught fire for real. But I think this article is relying a little bit too much on Jason Worth and perhaps a little bit too much on Denard Span, and perhaps a little too much on Ryan Zimmerman. But it did take into account that perhaps that Bryce Harper, who the article says plans to be as big as a house, doesn't hurt himself running into outfield walls, because that could happen too. But the Nationals at number 9, what do you think about that? I think I probably wouldn't even have them in my top 10, I don't think.
They were one of only two National League teams on the list. And I think the guys you just, all four guys you just pointed out, they're very much relying on projections. You're assuming that Jason Worth is going to repeat some of his good things he did last year. Assuming that Ryan Zimmerman is going to be healthy and ready to go. Assuming that Bryce Harper is going to continue to develop. I mean, we have to remember a lot of this projection is figuring that he is going to continue to improve, that he's going to continue to realize his talent, and that's not a given for a young player.
No, it certainly isn't. And in the interest of time, we're going to have to move on a bit here. Mm-hmm. They have on this list also, they have the Indians at number 7, the Cardinals at number 6, and the Tigers at number 5. Now, last year, you probably would have had the Tigers at number 1. But I really like the Indians. And I really like the fact that they're going to try Carlos Santana at third base. And if that experiment pays off, they have a kid named Yan Gomes who's ready to step right in and get things done. But they have a couple dandies over there in Santana and Kipnis.
They do. They've got a nice – they've got an – all three of the teams you just mentioned have versatile lineups. The Tigers improved their versatility this year with the trade of trade for Ian Kinsler. All of those guys, all of those three teams can beat you in a number of ways. You've got the speed of Michael Bourne. You've got some power on the Indians. Same with the Cardinals. You've got Matt Adams and you've got Matt Holliday. But then you've also got a guy like Matt Carpenter and Alan Craig's. They added Peter Burgess to add some speed. There's some a lot of ways those teams can beat you.
There absolutely is. I really like the Indians. I like the Cardinals and I like the Tigers. I like all three of those teams. especially their offenses. And, you know, the Cardinals are there every year. And you're right. You made a great comment about the versatility factor of the Tigers going up, and it will. You know, the thing is what I'd like to see is that young kid down in Detroit, I believe his last name is Castillo. If he gets a chance to play, watch out. This could be a good baseball team. And Austin Jackson gets it together. Kinsler has another one of his Ian Kinsler type years. And this is going to be a good baseball team, man. Really good. Now, they have the Angels at number four, the Oakland A's at number three, who we talk about every week, and the Red Sox at number two, and the Rangers at number one. I can't really argue too much with that order because it is what it is. The only wild card in that whole situation seems to be the Angels, right?
I completely agree. I think that is the riskiest pick of all of the ones on this list. Could be spot on, obviously, if Mike Trout stays healthy and Josh Hamilton and Albert Pujols produce, David Freese could be right. He might have slotted him just right, but it is also not out of the question that if the same things happen that have happened the past couple of years, that it really could, that ranking could be way too high.
That ranking could be seriously high because, unfortunately, they're relying on a couple of people who haven't really delivered much. And then you've got Albert Pujols, who's probably ready to raise his grandkids by now. And then you and you have Josh Hamilton, who doesn't like to hit in day games. And then you have David Freese and Raul Abanez. Freese had a little disappointing season last year, and Abanez is another one that's 40-41. Mm-hmm. They're relying on a lot of things, and I don't think that Mike Trout, as good as he is going to carry this team as far as they'd like offensively.
They definitely need contributions from those other guys. I worked with Josh Hamilton a lot when I was at the Rangers because obviously he was there a long time, and I definitely rooting for him because he's a terrific guy. I hope for his sake that the production he enjoyed over the last couple months of the season last year carries over to this year.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. You know, that's a big if, and they are such a risky pick. It's hard to get behind that team. But then in a way it isn't because they are loaded if they can just seem to stay healthy and get their collective acts together. Now, the Oakland A's at number three. Josh Donaldson had an amazing season last year. For those who listen to the show and listen to the Oakland Athletics report we do with Alex Hall every week, he was raving about this guy last spring, and he had a great year. The question is, can he repeat it?
The A's have to wonder that. They also have to wonder if Cespedes and Reddick will maybe bounce back a little bit. Even if Donaldson were to backslide, if you get a little bit of a bounce back season from those guys, you might be fine. And they've got a lot of depth to their lineup and in their farm system. You almost kind of feel with the A's like, okay, well, if one guy does fall off, he's going to get picked up. They just signed Coco Crisp to a new deal. They've got to, they're another team that is a versatile offense, use platoons a lot. You almost feel like those guys are kind of going to find a way to get it done.
Yep, I think you're right. It's going to be a good team. And Yoenis Cespedes, he needs to be a little bit more consistent at the plate. And Josh Reddick, if he can stay healthy, I'm looking for a bounce back year from him. This is a good baseball team. And you folks listening, if you've never heard the Oakland Athletics report, Addison Russell is almost ready for the big leagues, and once he comes up, it's going to be mighty interesting down there in Boston. I'm sorry, in Oakland. Now, in Boston, they're rated number two, and they've lost Jacoby Ellsbury, but they seem to have a lot left. Jackie Bradley Jr., they signed Grady Sizemore if he can play. Will Middlebrooks and Xander Bogaerts should be okay. And, of course, they have Big Poppy, Dustin Pedroia. I don't look for much from Shane Victorino, but they signed Mike Napoli to a three-year deal. Johnny Gomes is back, and Daniel Nava. This is a good bunch.
It is, and they've kind of got a nice blend of some youth with Middlebrooks and Bogaerts, and then some veterans with Ortiz and Napoli and Pedroia. you almost feel like, you know, if the veterans perform the way that they have in the past, and then the young guys take a step up, they have a chance to be even better than last year, despite losing Ellsbury.
I think you're right. And it's all going to really boil down to that pitching staff over there. You know, is guys like Lester and Lackey, are they going to be able to bolt their neck again like they did last year? And then what about Kujia Uehara? He's another one I'm not so sold on, but we're talking offense here. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But then we have the Rangers, and I'll tell you what, we've talked about them a couple times now, but Shin-Soo Choo is going to make a world of difference down there.
The Rangers added versatility to their lineup. That the trade with Detroit brought some power in that they needed. They added some on-base percentage in that trade. They also added tremendous on-base percentage with Chu and the ability to ignite that offense. And so that, I think, has a lot to do with why the Rangers were ranked so highly. You've got and it's really the top four in the lineup. It's Shin-Soo Choo batting first, Elvis Andrus. Then you've got Prince Fielder batting third, Adrian Beltre batting fourth. And you could generate a ton of runs from those four guys.
Yep, I completely agree with you. Now, there are some teams that made their honorable mention list. The Yankees, the Orioles, the Braves, the Mariners, the Diamondbacks, the Colorado Rockies. I wouldn't have put the Yankees in there. And I don't think I would have. I'm certain that I would put the Braves in the top 10 somewhere. But one team that was conspicuously left out, or two teams, are the Los Angeles Dodgers, which you pointed out to me in an email, and the Pittsburgh Pirates. I think that those two teams also have pretty good offenses as well, right?
Well, I started comparing the Dodgers and the Rangers, and you look at the top of that Dodger offense, and you've got, let's say, Puig, Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez, Wander Ribe, Matt Kemp, if he's healthy, Hanley Ramirez. That's a pretty stout top of the lineup. And then you've also got, now in the National League, of course, you can't play four outfielders, but you also have Andre Ethier. You've got A.J. Ellis. If the Cuban kid Guerrero ends up being good, boy, that's a pretty stacked lineup.
Yes, it is. We talked about them yesterday with Eric Steven. He called in from spring training because he covers the team. And, yeah, they're very strong, and I can't see why they're not in there. And the Pirates, too. You know, they've got Andrew McCutchen, and they have Neil Walker, and they have Starling Marte. And that's a pretty good bunch right there. I mean, this is a good baseball team in Pittsburgh as well, and I thought perhaps that they could have gotten at least a mention, but it's tough to crack MLB's news system here, or their top 10.
Yeah, they apparently were very, very picky. And of course, obviously, the season has to play out, so we'll see. And, you know, certainly no bad offenses in the top 10 by any means.
Well, no, not at all. The Rockies always are up there because of their home park. But the Braves, if the Upton brothers, and I use that plural because they both need to get her going, watch out for that baseball team.
By the way, I also think the Yankees could be interesting, depending on how healthy they are. You've got guys with track records like Jeter and Teixeira. You've got Brian McCann that they signed, Jacoby Ellsbury, Carlos Beltran. If Alfonso Soriano keeps hitting, the Yankees actually could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, they could be. You're right. I'll tell you what. Great stuff today, Rush. Thanks for being on the show.
You were welcome, Phil. Anytime.
My pleasure. That was Rush Olson. You can find him at rusholson.com. Coming up next, Mark Berman and I will talk about Ralph Kiner passing and lots of other Mets news. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends, And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of Mets Musings, and I hope you'll join me each and every week as I recap all of the comings and goings-on in New York Mets baseball. I'll have guests on from all across Mets Nation giving their insights and analysis on the New York Mets. And you can follow me on Twitter at MetsMusings1, as well as on Facebook. The group name is Mets Musings. So tune in weekly to the Mets Musings, available at MetsMusings.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes.com, iHeartRadio, and of course, BaseballTalkRadio.com, the home of great baseball talk shows.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels. You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannebernal.com. That's www.maryannebernal.com.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to philnasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at draftstreet.com today.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
Now here it is, your moment of zen.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The New York Mets are headed down to Port St. Lucie. Ralph Kiner passed away. And of course, the Mets are lying to us once again and have been. And I've been telling you that for a long time. And joining me to talk all about that and more, please welcome Mark Berman from BloggingMets.com. Mark, welcome to the show.
Always happy to be here.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate you being here as always. I was bummed the other day. I was having all kinds of struggles with audio and sound. And I just decided to take 5 minutes and I took a break and discovered that Ralph Kiner passed away. I was bummed. What about you?
Yeah, it's a sad day. I mean, he was the New York Mets. I mean, he was with the Mets from the beginning. You know, any Met fan grew up with him, you know, calling games and explaining games to us. So it was very sad. I mean, obviously the guy, you know, the guy was 91, so he lived a nice long life. But still, anytime someone dies, it's sad. And he's definitely missed. Anytime he showed up on the broadcast, you know, he did, you know, about a half a dozen a year now, and he did three innings. It was always an event. It was always exciting. Like, oh, Ralph's in the booth, and we're going to get great stories. And while he was obviously slowing down physically, mentally was still really sharp, which was really nice to hear and to, you know, to see that the guy was still, the mind was still working proper the way it always has. So, but it's still definitely sad.
Yeah, it was sad. I tell you what, I was bummed. You know, my blog on my website, it's called Phil's Corner, as you know, and that's a dedication to Ralph. You know, Kiner's Corner, Phil's Corner. I just thought it was a good sound for it, and I just wanted to honor him because, like you just said, we grew up with the dude, man. We grew up with him on WWOR. And we grew up listening to him along with Lindsey Nelson and Bob Murphy. And it was just one of those deals, you know. I didn't get to hear him call the Mets 69 World Series. I was only four, for goodness sakes. I remember the Mets being pretty good, but that's about all I remember. But he did live a long life, and he worked with some greats like Tim McCarver.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Tim MacArthur. And Gary Carter, Gary Cooper. It was great, but I'll miss that ball is gone. Goodbye.
Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, he was on a broadcast and he was telling a story about Rogers Hornsby. And it got me thinking, how many people are alive who knew Roger Hornsby? I mean, you know, one of the all-time, you know, classic baseball players. And I remember writing on my blog saying how surprising it was that someone was still alive who knew Rogers Hornsby. And I said, Ralph's not going to be alive forever. We should really cherish every moment that we hear him. And I really believe that. And now he's gone.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer. You know, one of my most favorite recent memories of him is when he came up to the booth, came into the booth with the fellas, and Keith Hernandez asked him about Jason Bay. And Kiner was always straight, man. He said, if Jason Bay were on my teams, he wouldn't have been playing.
Yep, I remember that.
That was just fantastic. But boy, he's going to be missed. He is Mr. Met. Forget about the mascot. That's Mr. Met right there. And he made it in the Hall of Fame by one vote, and that's all you need. And by golly, I'm going to miss that dude, man. I'm going to miss. That ball is going. Goodbye.
Yeah, me too.
Jeez, I've got a little choke in my throat there, man, because that really touched me. I'll tell you what, that really touched me. Anyhow, what touched me even more, before we get into the fun part, was the Mets. You know what I'm talking about, right? Because we get to have some more fun calling the Mets liars, because that is what they are. Zach Wheeler wants to start on opening day, but so does John Neese. It's nice to know that everybody wants to start on opening day, but who should start on opening day? I think it should be John Neese if he's healthy.
Well, first let me say, it's nice to hear Zach Wheeler say he wants to start, because the rap against him was that he was kind of passive and kind of like too laid back, which is the opposite of Matt Harvey. So, you know, I can see Matt Harvey saying, oh, yeah, I want to be the starting pitcher. And I can see Wheeler going, yeah, you know, I don't care if I start. As long as I'm in the rotation, I don't care. So it's nice to see that he has this competitiveness and that he really is striving to be the best, to be an ace. So that's really nice. I think Neese deserves it. He's been with the team, you know, now for several years and had a good season last season. I think he totally deserves it. What's his name? Terry Collins said he probably won't give it to Neese because he's a lefty. They'll slot him between two righties, you know, for the rotation, which makes sense. But it'd be nice to see Neese. I don't want to see Bartolo Colon as the starter because he's new. He's new to the team. It's kind of an honor, and I don't think he's earned it. So if it were me, I'd give it to Neese.
If it were me, I'd give it to Neese, too. Zach Wheeler laid back. He's the guy who beans his teammates in batting practice. He did that down in AAA. He's not laid back, man. He just acts.
That's good to hear, because
that's
what reports I was reading, that he's kind of just laid back. Maybe it was just in comparison to Matt Harvey, he's laid back.
Or maybe he's just a little more careful in front of the press and doesn't care that much because he knows where he's going.
Maybe.
Harvey was just complaining because he wanted to get up there because he was bored. Zach Wheeler wasn't bored in Las Vegas. That's his kind of town. If you sent him back down there, I don't think he would be upset at all. But still in all, I don't know. I think John Neese should get to start. Either him or Bartolo Colon. I would start Colon. Even though he hasn't earned it, he is a Cy Young Award winner after all. And he did win 18 games last season. Maybe not for the Mets, but he's probably the best pitcher on the staff, and you know, maybe that's how he'll do it. I don't know, but
it might end up that way. As you know, I'm not a Colon fan. I think this is a disastrous signing. So hopefully, I'm wrong.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. I'll tell you what, a good signing. I thought a hedge your bet signing in case Bobby Parnell goes in the toilet. The New York Mets signed Kyle Farnsworth to a minor league deal. I like this signing.
Yeah, me too. I mean, Just like the Lannan and Matsuzaka signings, there's no risk here. It works out, and it's good, or it doesn't work out, and the guy's gone, and the Mets risk, you know, a few thousand dollars. Same thing came down on Wednesday morning that the Mets signed Jose Valverde to a similar kind of contract. I have no problem with that either. These are guys who were successful, and they're a little older now, but if they can, you know, find that magic like LaTroy Hawkins did, then the Mets have a bargain.
Yeah, he was 3-1 overall last season and pitching in two different leagues. And he had 48 appearances. He's not that bad. He's pitched, what did he pitch? Almost 40 innings.
Farnsworth?
Yeah, and he struck out some guys. I mean, he's okay. He doesn't walk that many. So, I think this is a good pickup. I think it's a cheap pickup. And if it doesn't work out, you send him on his way. He goes and pitches for another team. Because he will pitch in the majors if he's healthy this year. He's a veteran.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, Alderson is still scraping the bottom of the barrel like he always has, but he's getting better scraps. Like Farnsworth and Valverde, like I said before, they're people who were successful in baseball, and maybe they can do it again. Whereas in years past, he was signing guys like Taylor Buchholz and Blaine Boyer and Brandon Lyon, who were never successful, and the Mets were counting on these guys to suddenly become good pitchers, and it didn't happen. So at least they're getting better possibilities now.
Valverde is a pretty good one if he can stay healthy and get his head together.
Yeah, 2011, what was he, 49 for 49 in saves? I mean,
yeah, the Tigers didn't give up on him.
Yeah, then he completely lost it. But
then they brought him back, and then they dumped him again.
But, again, no risk. Maybe he turns it around, maybe he doesn't. They're both good signs. I like the bullpen this year. I was saying even mid-September last year, I was saying the Mets won't need a bullpen overhaul, and a lot of people disagreed with me. But I think it looks pretty good. If Parnell comes back, Vic Black looks good, Edgin and Scott Rice, two quality lefties. However you pronounce his name, German, and Carlos Torres. I think the bullpen's going to be good this year.
Yeah, I think so. We'll have to wait and see. But they definitely did do some upgrading. And if these guys can pan out, they might be all right. Oh, boy. I got to tell you. I've been saying this, and I said this in the opening, I've been saying this for years, that don't buy the Mets and their small ball payroll BS, because they have plenty of money. They make plenty of money owning the New York Mets. Don't believe it for a second. But people tell me, you're wrong. Well, turns out I was right. And now they get to refinance their $250 million loan. And, well, now they have salary restrictions, but before that they didn't.
No.
Explain this to me again, because I'm trying to read this and it's not coming out right.
Okay. Basically, it was reported in the New York Post about a week and a half ago that the Mets were going to refinance their $250 million loan. And the report said this would put all the Mets' financial problems behind them, which they already said were behind them, but whatever. So the key part of the new agreement, and this is a quote from the Post, there are no payroll limits written into the reworked loan, says a source. Then they write this: the existing loan restricts the team from greatly expanding payroll. And that means that the Mets have had payroll restrictions these past several years based on their loan agreement, which flies in the face of everything the Mets have said, saying there's no payroll restriction, Alderson has all the money he needs. You know, that's money's not a problem. So that was just a huge, huge lie, the biggest of a series of lies from the Mets front office about their finances. So, and I read that it was a Thursday night. I immediately wrote what a huge lie this was and what a big deal this was. And no one in the media really picked up on it. And I don't understand why. Here's pretty much confirmation that the Mets could not raise their payroll and that they've been lying about it the whole time. And no one seems to care. And I don't understand that. But this is a huge, huge deal and a huge, huge lie. And the media are giving the Mets a pass on this. And I don't get it. I don't understand why.
Yeah, I had that mixed up. I had it backwards. Yeah. I had the facts right in the wrong place. That's all.
That's okay.
Well, whatever. It is what it is. I didn't write the article anyway. I didn't even follow it because I just don't pay attention to anything the front office really does. But so it would seem to be that there's a reason they weren't spending money.
Right. And again, if that's the issue, fine. Then why not just say, yes, our payroll is going to be X because we can't spend a lot of money or whatever, instead of just lying to us. They've been, the Met front office has been lying to us for years, from the very beginning of the Madoff scandal when they said, oh, this won't affect team finances. Remember that one?
Yep.
And everything they've said about payroll has been a lie. And Alderson wasn't there for the beginning of Madoff, but he's been there since. And he's the one who's been saying, yeah, our payroll's going to be $120 million. It's going to be $110. It's going to be $100. Oh, we're not going to raise payroll. We're not going to lower payroll. So he's just lying along with the Mets, with the Wilpons. And it's a shame that we have to put up with this because we're fans. And we do have to put up with it, unfortunately.
Yeah, but Alderson had no choice. You want to keep your job, you go out there and utter the company lying.
Well, you know what? But still, don't lie. You don't have to answer every question, but just to lie, he's just as bad as they are.
They're all a bunch. As far as I'm concerned, the Mets front office is crap. The owners are crap, and that's just all there is to it.
Yeah.
Bass Freddy.
And it's funny, we all thought Nelson Doubleday was the bad owner and Wilpon was the good one, but Doubleday was the one who wanted to spend money. And when Wilpon bought out Doubleday, that was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, you know something, though? Wilpon did spend money. He just spent money in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
And he trusted too many of the wrong people to spend his money, and that's not a good thing. Alderson has definitely proven that if he has some money to spend, he'll do it.
Yeah, I suppose.
What did you want him to get? Jacoby Ellsbury? They're not going to do that.
No.
Who did you want them to go get that they didn't?
I don't remember. I wasn't a big fan of any of the huge free agents. I wasn't a Chu fan. I was happy with Granderson. I'm not happy with Cologne. What I'm upset about is everyone's saying, oh, the Mets are spending money, but they're really not because the payroll is going to be lower than it was last year. So, you know, they're not operating, you know, they're not going to have a $60 million payroll, but they're going to have 90, which is an embarrassment for a New York team.
Yeah, but they actually upgraded, though, and spent technically less money because they are a better baseball team, at least on paper, than they have been in a while.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Anyway, Mark, great stuff today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
That was Mark Berman. You can find him at bloggingmets.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank all my guests for talking lots of baseball with me today. Tomorrow we're going to talk lots of basketball. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you, and I thank you.
You just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. Thanks for listening, and see you tomorrow. You just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. Thanks for listening, and see you tomorrow. You just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. Thanks for listening and see you tomorrow. You just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. Thanks for listening, and see you tomorrow. You just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at FlashTennis31. Thanks for listening, and see you tomorrow.